Hi, guys. Welcome to another episode of Natural Fertility with Dr. Jane. I, of course, am Dr. Jane, and today I'm joined by Melissa, who is a PCOS fertility coach. Thank you for being here, Melissa.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
PCOS is a big topic right now in general in women's health and, of course, in the fertility space. Tell us a little bit about your journey, how you got into coaching.
I've been a coach for a few years, but I've been in the sort of, I guess you could say, PCOS awareness and advocacy space for probably about 8 years. And I was diagnosed, oh my God, it was probably 13 or 14 years ago now, but it really all changed for me when I got pregnant for the first time and then we experienced pregnancy loss, which I think that you have a sort of similar path as well. And it was just so life-altering. We were traveling at the time. We were in India. We were backpacking. We were so excited to be pregnant. I just felt like it was this miraculous pregnancy because my cycles had been very irregular. And then we had been in China and I thought, well, I'm in China. I might try and see a Chinese medicine practitioner for the first time. And it just worked for me. It just, the medicines worked so, so well. And it regulated.
It's very different there than it is here. Like, it's crazy when you go to a TCM.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Like, they can just like see everything that you need. Like, that's what I've heard. I haven't had personal, but they're just like, you're congested over here and here and here. And then boom, everything is fixed.
It really was like that. It really was like that. She made this tea for me that I got to travel with. And I took these big bags of tea and I would make them every day. Like, even when we were trekking and everything, I like put them in the backpack. And it just worked right away. 28-day cycle immediately. And we got pregnant immediately. We got pregnant the very first time we tried. And it just felt miraculous. And so we were instantly connected to this little baby. And we went through a lot with that baby too. An earthquake happened while we were in Nepal and I was pregnant and I didn't know yet. And we just went through so much. So when we found out we were pregnant, it was just like, oh, you know. And so the loss of it was just so deeply felt. And we were overseas. We didn't have our normal healthcare, our normal family support or anything. And I had to have surgery too. So it was this really big event in our lives. And while I was there, I had this beautiful doctor in this hospital who knew so much about PCOS. She was my surgeon and she told me things about PCOS that I had never learned before. And I was just so surprised that this pivotal info was just not globally known and wasn't just shared as soon as you get your diagnosis. And so I remember being in Mumbai, being in the hotel room and turning to my husband, just, you know, amidst just so much crying and saying, like, once we're through this and I'm feeling better and I'm through my own health journey, I want to start sharing this information because I was very struck by how unfair it was that I had learned this information that I really felt was going to help me to get pregnant again and was going to help me actually hold my pregnancy. And I'd learned this info and then somebody else with PCOS just might not learn that info. They might not have the right doctor or stumble upon that corner of the internet. And I really felt this strong urge to just get the word out, I suppose you can say. And I dove really deep into learning about PCOS. I was reading everything I could. As I said, I didn't have my practitioners around, so I was turning to the internet. I was ordering books and getting them delivered to hotels. And I was just diving deep. I was speaking to experts on the internet. And I learned just so much in that time and I really wanted to share it. And once I got through that, and I mean, my health completely transformed because I really learned so much about what I needed. And I got pregnant with my son, Koji, about 5 months later, again, as soon as we began trying, because I really knew what to do at that point. And then, it was after he was born that I started making a little blog and then getting on Instagram. And then I actually started really early on writing a book about all these things that I had learned. And I found that I had a bit of a knack for putting these concepts in in easy to understand ways. So, yeah, that's kind of where it began. And then I started a podcast, the PCOS Girls podcast with my co-host Bridget Warne, and that kind of snowballed things. And then eventually, I mean, the whole time, even though I very much was broadly sharing about PCOS, the real spot in my heart was for helping people with their fertility journeys. When I started sharing that information that I had learned, and then people started getting pregnant and telling me that, it was like, wow. It gave a lot of meaning and purpose to the loss I had experienced, which meant a lot to me. I feel like you might relate to that.
We heal by sharing through other people's journeys. Yeah, it's
you really And you process too. Like, I've processed what I went through back then by being able to talk about it. And so, yeah, eventually I mean, because I've been a stay-at-home mom / work-from-home mom, and finding the time to do study was, like, inconceivable to me. But then, yeah, a few years back, I was like, all right, I'm going to become a health coach and start being able to work with people one-to-one and sharing this information. And it was just incredible being able to create an approach and help people to do it for themselves, because I'm a big believer in that empowerment. And I think because of the healthcare landscape we have for PCOS and the inconsistencies in our care, I think the common denominator is you, the patient. And so fair or unfair, unfortunate or fortunate, I don't know. But I think actually educating ourselves to a level is really important and gets us better outcomes and shortens our fertility journey. So being able to work with people one-to-one to help them to do that for themselves has been amazing. And yeah, I mean, this loss that was just the worst thing I'd ever been through just completely reshaped my whole life and my career in this strange way.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you for sharing it. I love what you said about, you know, I mean, the incongruency in healthcare, I think, is one of the biggest issues that we're facing in the conventional space. And even in the holistic space, I'll see a lot of practitioners who are like, I just focus on Lyme. I just focus on thyroid. I just focus on, you know, even I just focus on X, Y, and Z. And then it's like, yeah, but this part of you impacts everything else.
Yes.
You know, it's like, who is looking at which hormonal imbalances or which infection or which environmental toxin? And in the conventional system, it's very fragmented, because even from the reproductive, they'll go, well, we don't do the ovaries. We're only focusing on the uterine environment. Or like, once the embryo is made, like, oh, well, we need an embryologist for that. That's not something that we as fertility specialists do. And you're like, isn't that the same? Like, didn't you kind of help me make this thing? And, you know, what's going on with the liver, what's going on with the gut is all impacting and connected.
Absolutely. So
it's really is what makes us feel really overwhelmed, I think, as patients.
I think so too. And it really is amazing how connected everything is. And I think the health coaching has brought that home for me more than anything else that I've done along the way. Just seeing the pictures of these clients and being like, whoa, like bam, 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 like that is all so linked. And of course, like the thing that I very thoroughly can speak about and know about is PCOS fertility. And that is very specific. But through this process, I've had to learn so much more and see how connected it all is. And it's been pretty eye-opening.
I go down to some deep rabbit holes. I don't know if we'll get there.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to, but I'm curious.
Always.
I know. Tell me what you know. But you know, the question that I'll always ask my patients is like, do you know why you have PCOS? How far back does it actually go? Because if you're told it's just genetics, and then I'm looking and zooming out at the statistics in the last 30 to 50 years and seeing the prevalence of PCOS increase by over 50%, I'm thinking it's not just genetics, you know? And then seeing women who have been misdiagnosed for forever, and yes, we are getting better at diagnosing. So absolutely, that's going to play a role in, you know, now we're seeing more of the prevalence of the diagnosis. And that's why some of the stats are going up. But they wouldn't go up by 50%. Just because of the better technology that we have now. I think genuinely more people have this diagnosis. And then we have to start asking these deeper questions of like, why is this happening versus it is just genetics. That's just the way there it is. You know, sorry, there's nothing you can do about it. Because that also mentally makes you go, oh, yeah, that's right. I can't do anything about it. It's just bad luck. And to me, I think it's like we're just giving up on the body. We're essentially just saying, hey, the body is just defaulted. Like sometimes it just doesn't work that well. So sorry, you got to be this kind of broken car over here. But some people don't. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I buy that.
I completely agree with you. I think there is that genetic component. We know there is a genetic component that can be triggered. And I think that when I look at everything, because I talk about root causes, that's a big part of what I do. I think the most important thing we can do is answer that question that you asked right there at the beginning, which is, why do you have PCOS? What is driving this? Because when we think about what PCOS is, it's defined as a condition of those high androgens. Well, okay, but why? What is pushing your androgens, like testosterone or DHEAS or whatever it might be? What is pushing those androgens higher? And for me personally, I really think about there being six root causes. I call them PCOS drivers, things that are driving your PCOS. And all six of these things can increase those androgens. And the really genetic component of it is the part of the brain that creates this the GnRH release and the pulse rate of that GnRH hormone being released from the brain. With PCOS, it's seen that we have a faster pulse rate. This GnRH hormone is being released at a faster rate. And what it does, it has this flow-on effect to our luteinizing hormone. It increases our luteinizing hormone. And that's where the problem lies. That's where we see that we can't mature our follicles enough for ovulation. So then we come back to, okay, well, we have this fast GnRH pulse rate. Why? And there is this genetic component to it. But also, there are these six root causes that can drive our androgens higher. And those high androgens, what do? They tell our brain to increase the pulse rate of our GnRH.
And round and round we go,
because then the high GnRH pulse rate makes the high LH, the high LH makes the high androgens and the high estrogen.
I'm so glad that you're talking about this, because this has just been an eye-opening thing. But for me as well,
it's
here that I've learned. But essentially, this LH is triggering the Leydig, not the Leydig cells, the theca cells in the ovary. And the theca cells are the ones that are hyper-producing the androgens. So then it becomes this theca cell dysfunction and the communicate, and then cholesterol and liver function and mitochondria function all start to play a role in that. But it is very much starting at that brain level, the GnRH into the LH, and then the overstimulating the ovary to produce these hormones, and then the hormones drive it back, and we have
It is this negative. It's this negative feedback loop. But to come back to your question, well, what is making those androgens go higher to trigger this negative feedback loop? We have these six root causes, and I think the reason why we're seeing this increase in PCOS diagnosis is because a lot of these six root causes, they all come back to the lifestyle and the society that we're living in. I will touch on these six root causes if it's all right with you.
Please,
we've got the insulin
resistance. I'm waiting to hear them. What are they?
Sorry.
I'm wondering if they match up to mine.
I'm not trying to gatekeep, I promise. We've got the insulin resistance. We've got inflammation. We've got gut health, which those two are just so connected. I see them. You've got one, you've got the other. We've got stress. We've got coming off the pill in the last sort of 12 months or so. And thyroid issues. So, like, at one point, I think the stat was 80. This isn't a general stat. This is my personal stat. I think it was 82% of my clients either had a thyroid condition as well, or we uncovered one. It is so, it's just seen so much with PCOS, and that impact that the thyroid can have on our sex hormone binding globulin, which is meant to bind to our excess testosterone. I just think that if we have thyroid issues at play, it is going to make your PCOS worse, because it's going to result in those higher androgens, and then around and around we go. But to come back to all those root causes, how much of that is just lifestyle? And I don't mean the individual's fault of their lifestyle. I mean the lifestyle we are born into, the world, the modern world, really, is what I'm talking about. I often joke that
we did create it in some way, shape, or form. Do you know what I mean? Like, if we just say, well, it's not my fault completely, it's like, yeah, it's not our direct fault. But I always think about, we don't really understand the natural consequences of things anymore. Do you know, like, I don't understand the natural consequences of throwing my trash into, like, just oh, I this is a broken, I'm just going to go ahead and throw it away, or this, and then not seeing the impact that that really has, because it's like, oh, look at right. that. Our ocean is now filled with trash, or yeah. our landfill is now filled with all of these things that we just keep kind of replacing in that. And so some of that has just been gatekept and then not really understanding the
so true.
How we spend our money, where our food comes from. Like, there has just been a disconnect, you know, between
that's
like
very,
nature
very
and us. Yes. And so then we don't have this connection. And absolutely, like, I see some babies being born now and I'm like, God, that's rough. Like, the amount of microplastics that baby has in the placenta and the exposure and what happens to the brain and all of this. But we need to start looking. And I have patients now, I'm like, this is generational. You know, you're 40 years old and things that you're dealing with is so generational. Like, there's so much trauma. There's so much exposure to things. And now this poor body is trying to sort through it in this lifetime. And there's so many beautiful lessons and there's so many beautiful things that come out through that healing journey. But then there's also the reality of like, oh, we all somehow contributed to this mess in some way, shape, or form, and whether it was conscious or, you know, unconscious.
Yeah, I do agree with you. And I think, I mean, back to fortunate or unfortunate, I think the solution is that self-education and to become aware of what we can do to help ourselves. Yes. And when we're looking at such a large portion of the population having at least one health condition, chronic health condition, well, we have no choice at this point. It is clearly impacting all of us. And so far, there isn't a lot of sort of public health change that is happening, or at least not fast enough for that to be having the impact. We've got to do it ourselves and for ourselves. And that's just the way it's got to be. And for our families. Yeah. I do often joke that I think that I was really just born to, I'm meant to live a long time ago. I'm meant to be riverside. I'm just, you know, some people's bodies just might be able to handle the modern world that we have. Like my husband, he can just sort of, so far anyway, he can just do whatever. Be however, and he is just vibrant and healthy. Me, I got the chronic health conditions. I have to come back to nature or that natural state as much as possible. And we have, you're right, we've lost so much of that. We're not seeing the sun. We are sitting at our desk for most of our day. We're not getting enough sleep. We're getting an onslaught of blue light. We're eating foods covered in chemicals and endocrine disrupting chemicals, and it's in our air, it's in our water. There is an onslaught, but I don't think all hope is lost. We just, it's a counterbalance. And
for sure.
We just need to
start making changes, you know?
Yes, yes. Yeah. And I think, with PCOS, I mean, when we look at Western pharmaceutical medicine, there are some options there for us that can help us to potentially manage symptoms. But obviously, we're not looking at prevention or true healing from the ground up. And when we look at natural medicine, there are hundreds of options for us that can specifically help us with the things that we need. So I'm a big believer in that. But where we can, I think there is a lot of genuinely powerful lifestyle stuff that we can do. Like with a PCOS fertility journey, it can end up being costly. And I know that for a lot of people, that's a big off-putting thing. It's like, no, I'm just going to go to my doctor and they're going to put me on this one medicine and then that's what I'll do. But then there's lots of people who are like, but I really do want to heal from the ground up, but I can't afford it. And so I think
medicine didn't work for them, you know, like I've seen women go on birth control
Absolutely.
And go crazy and lose all their hair and be psychotic, literally have to divorce their husband because they're not themselves.
And or they go on letrozole and they just don't ovulate from it. It doesn't work. This thing that is the, and then the doctor's like, well, now we've got to go to IVF. And it's like, well, actually, natural medicine's got so many options. And there are genuinely fantastic lifestyle practices that can have an impact. And so, yeah, I know when I'm making a plan for someone, or I've got a course these days that people can join. And it's got a big focus on like, okay, let's try and save money, time, energy, and build a plan that is, you know, really as lifestyle based as possible, depending on your goals.
Yep, for sure. Yeah. No, I love what you said. There's a couple things you said about when you learned from the practitioner, maybe it was the TCM doc, that was really life-changing for you about PCOS? Do you mind? What was that?
Yes. That was actually from my obstetrician gynecologist in Mumbai. But what I found when seeing, I saw a few doctors while I was in Mumbai, and God, did they know about PCOS. Man, did they understand it more than any doctor I've seen since. Like, they really got it. And it was really eye-opening. And the level of care and compassion that I received was not something I've seen in Australia from a Western medicine doctor. And I don't know what that's about, but it is what I experienced. And what she shared, I'll share the biggest thing. When I came to her and I'd lost the baby, I needed surgery because the baby wasn't coming out on its own, even though it had passed away weeks earlier. She was like, well, have you been getting your progesterone tested through your first trimester? And I said no. And she was shocked and blown away. And she was like, but you have PCOS. I was like, yeah, yes. What does this mean?
How old were you when you were pregnant that first time?
I was 28.
Okay, yep.
And she explained to me that when we're in the first trimester of pregnancy, progesterone is really, really important for maintaining the pregnancy. It helps us to keep our uterine lining stable. And so if we have low levels of progesterone in pregnancy, it can be a cause of pregnancy loss. She explained that through the first trimester, the mother's body produces that progesterone. And then once we get to the end of that first trimester, the placenta begins taking over that production. So through that first trimester, it's the mum's progesterone that's really, really important. And with PCOS, don't get me wrong, it's not a condition that is defined by having low progesterone. But when we talk about that negative feedback loop that we were discussing, it can absolutely result in producing low progesterone. And I know
because
that
we're
I see
not ovulating.
Because we're not ovulating
to produce progesterone.
Exactly. And also, I think because a lot of us have got thyroid conditions and that's impacting our progesterone production, a lot of us have stress and that's driving our PCOS. And when we've got high stress, high cortisol, that reduces our progesterone as well. There's so many reasons why having PCOS can produce a low progesterone state. And so she very much encouraged me that when I got pregnant again, that through that first trimester to find a doctor who would test my progesterone regularly, every week if I could. So that was the big thing for me, where I was just like, whoa, like I just didn't, because I think, and I had this experience, and I have had this experience since when I've got pregnant with my daughter. Once you get pregnant and you go to the doctor, they're like, cool, well done, job well done. You did it. Part's over. You got through that PCOS struggle. And the care kind, the PCOS specific care kind of ends there, when it really shouldn't.
It's just the beginning of the journey.
It's just the beginning.
Like talking about the fragmentation in care. Yeah. And, you know, we specialize in fertility, but once my patients are pregnant, we don't just let them go. Like they stay through pregnancy and usually they stay postpartum because it's the most kind of foundational. And then they usually come back for baby number two when they're ready because there's so much. I want you to keep sharing. The only other thing that I would say about the progesterone, it's not just the implantation. It's actually really important for the neurological development of the baby. Oh. The higher the levels of progesterone, the better development of the nervous system.
I didn't even know that. Wow.
Yeah, because it is, we make it as women in the brain. My mentor, Dr. Leah Hedgman, calls it the slut of the hormones because it can go wherever it's needed. And so on the on the sex steroid chart, it's pretty high up there. And so you get the cholesterol, the pregnenolone, and then you're basically like, you know, it's progesterone, and then it goes down into the androgen pathways. And so let's say you need more estrogen in the body, or there is cortisol, or the theca cells are dysfunctioning and they're pushing everything into the androgen pathways, that progesterone will feed into it, or will feed into the inflammation, or will feed into the cortisol the cortisol steal. I think most people are familiar with that. But the neurological development for the baby, and one of the reasons we're seeing more neurological issues now in children, is because of these low levels of progesterone. And I don't know if you've seen this and how much lab work you look at, but I've seen a really big trend where the reference ranges are changing, and they're not changing because it's optimal for health. It's because they're taking the reference ranges of, let's say there's 100 people that come in and test. They'll take the average, the low and the high, and that's what the reference range is. And if so, most people are coming in and they're, you know, who's going in to get lab work when they're like, I feel really healthy today, I should go get labs done. They tend to go when, you know, you're inflamed, you're sick, your, you know, hormones are imbalanced. And so I've seen the thyroid range change all the time, like free T4. I was like, that's not, that used to be like 10 years ago, that used to be low. And now you're telling me that's on the upper range. So knowing our ranges and understanding that as practitioners is really important. And so I've seen that in progesterone, where they'll say things like, oh yeah, no, that's great. And it's like, what are you talking about? This is barely, like, this barely tells me the person ovulated, let alone, you know, small levels.
I had heard this about reference ranges changing over time, but I didn't understand the mechanism for that. I mean, it makes sense. I get why they do that, but that's very detrimental.
Yeah, well, no, because like liver enzymes is a really good example, and I've seen that change a lot in the last 5-10 years. Like GGT, for example, it used to be 0 to 30, and now it's 0 to 54. And so it's like even a 30 is high for me. Like I'm thinking liver inflammation there. But 54, it's like, oh, you know, when people are walking around with inflamed livers and their doctors are like, no, you're fine.
And I think this is where
preeclampsia hits and all of these other things, right? And you're like, no, we could actually have seen it coming a long time ago. It's just the fragmentation in the care and this optimal versus reference range, you know, and hence why we're here, because we're educating people.
Absolutely.
Because I do think I 100% agree with you. It's like, for better or for worse, we're in a place where you have to understand what's going on in your body, and you have to trust that. You have to trust that when someone tells you, nah, you're fine, and you're like, yeah, but like, I'm not ovulating, or like, I can't lose this 20 pounds that I've been, you know, or I can't sleep, or my hair is falling out, or I have this, and someone's sitting in front of you and telling you that you're fine. I hope that as a woman, you will go, you know what? I'm not fine.
Yeah.
And you're full of shit. And so let me go find someone who's going to tell me that. Like, validate and hear my story, and then show me the labs that show what's going on, and then, you know, give me some kind of a plan.
Yes.
Instead of like, no, it's normal to have hair on your chin. Just like, this is the best razor to use, you know?
Yeah. And I think what I'd say we're both seeing is it is that it's getting informed, that self-education that gives you the confidence when you're in that doctor's office to really know what you deserve and require. And so you have that confidence to ask for it. And then if you can see this doctor is not going to be helpful, it gives you that energy to pull out of yourself to go book another appointment and find somebody else. Again, it's not really fair. It shouldn't be like that, but it gets better.
It is where we are now. And so we have to change it. You know, like, I feel the same way. And I don't know if you ever, because I'll have some. I mean, I have some patients who have kids already, and it's secondary infertility versus they don't. But for those women who don't have kids yet, I'm like, if that was your child and they were really sick, what would you do? Like, would you walk away from that office because the doctor said your child is fine? Or would you step in there and demand some answers because you're
such
so worried?
Way to put it.
That's what I need you to do for yourself. Like, treat yourself as if you were your child and they're turning you away. And I find in the infertility, like, I always look at the mental, emotional, like, spiritual, the energetics of the person. And usually the women who are very, like, they're very quiet, they're very reserved. They don't want to be a burden. They don't want to bother anybody. Yeah. They just want to keep to that, like, oh, is it okay if I bring this up? And they need to go from this, oh, I don't want to be a burden, to like, I am not a burden, but I need help. And that's different, you know, finding the voice, finding that lioness in them.
I agree. And I think it's like, once you start realizing what like testing is a really good example. Like there's so much testing that we really require as people with PCOS. We really require to understand what is driving it, what hormones are out of balance. Like so much gets missed because doctors don't thoroughly test us and we're looking at half the picture. And once my clients, I've noticed once they start to understand what they really require, when they go to the doctor and that get that pushback, it's not so much like, oh, I don't want to upset. There's a bit of fire that comes out of them then, because they're like, well, wait. You kind of become,
I think, the fire. Show me the fire.
Yeah, I know. I want the fire too. And it helps. Like, I saw it when I came back to Australia. After we'd been traveling and we'd been through this huge experience of loss, and I came back to Australia, we started trying to conceive, and I knew that I would need this doctor who would test my progesterone. I wasn't yet pregnant. Like we just arrived back and we actually had moved to a new area than we had been living in Australia. And so it was all new. And I went to a doctor and I was like, we're about to start trying again. And I have learned this thing about progesterone and I'm looking for a doctor. I was just going to a regular general practitioner. I was like, I'm looking for a doctor who's going to be able to test my progesterone through the first trimester. And she was like, but the baby makes the progesterone. Like, you don't need to worry about that. I was like, well, I mean, this is what I learned though, actually. It's like pretty interesting. She gave me some like
now
things.
You can just go on Google or ChatGPT and be like, you're full of shit, lady. Sorry. I know you have a degree, but like, you're not staying up to date on things.
No. She ordered some bloods for me unrelated to that. And so I had to see her again to get the results. And when I went back to see her, she was like, you know, I had a dinner party with my doctor friends last week and I told them all about what you said about getting your progesterone tested in first trimester. And we laughed and we laughed and we laughed. She was so nasty to me. And I was just like, okay, thanks. See ya.
I'm out of here.
But because I knew this thing and I felt this confidence in this knowledge, I was like, okay, on to the next. And I went and I found another GP. He didn't know about it either, but he was respectful and kind. And he was like, I don't know about this, but what I know is that I'm allowed to test your progesterone in the first trimester. By the way, there was something I missed in my story earlier that's pretty important to anyone with PCOS listening. If it turns out your progesterone is low, there are things that you can do about it. And there's actually, it's a medication prescribed by doctors, but it's micronized progesterone. It's bioidentical to our own progesterone. It's plant derived and it can help to support your progesterone levels.
It does, yeah.
In pregnancy and out. And so I knew that there was a solution. And so this doctor that I now went to, he was like, look, I don't know about any of this, but what I know is that I'm allowed to test your progesterone in pregnancy, but I'm not allowed to prescribe that to you in pregnancy. You would need a gynecologist for that. So I'm going to refer you to a gynecologist. So he was
fantastic, just
lovely and supportive. And he did, but by the time I actually saw him, I was pregnant. I had gotten pregnant right away again. And so by now, like I'm telling you, like I was feeling panicky because I was like, oh, I still don't have the doctor in place and I need this. And it wasn't a good feeling. This is why one of the parts of my course, and if you work with me one-to-one, is like, let's figure this out before you're pregnant. Because when you're figuring it out whilst pregnant, it doesn't feel so good. Anyway, later that day, this gynecologist called me and he was like, you have PCOS, you've had a miscarriage already. And he didn't say progesterone is the slut hormone, but he said progesterone is the life hormone. You absolutely need it. We need to know if it's low. He was like, I'm going to prescribe it to you right now. I'm going to fax it over to your local chemist because he lived in another town. I'm going to fax it to your local chemist. You start on it. You go get your blood test right now. And then you start on that medicine today, just in case. And it was like, I just bawled my eyes out because I was like, yay, like support. And then, yeah, I tested my progesterone and it was low and I totally needed that medicine. So I forget actually what my point here was.
But you know what? I actually make sure. Oh, yeah. One of the things I'll say to my clients is like, make sure you have the support that you need before you get pregnant because it's so stressful not to have that support.
Yeah,
it's so stressful to be pulling teeth to try to get labs knowing that there's something that you could do about your situation and not being able to do it because your doctors are just not listening. And I think it's so criminal. But I've had patients, especially, you know, when I first started practicing in the fertility space and we made that mistake, they got pregnant and I'm like, they'll test your thyroid for sure. They'll test your progesterone for sure. Nope, they won't because they're like, well, just wait until the 13-week mark. And I'm like, what are you talking about? That's when that's when the miscarriage will happen, you know?
It needs to happen before that.
And it's happened before that. So, you know, and she ended up carrying, but it was so stressful to get, you know, it was until week 8 she couldn't get the right things. And we just did as much as we could to keep her calm. And I got her husband involved in, like, calling all the clinics so she didn't have to worry about it. But I very much now, I'm like, just make sure the OB that you have is on your team. If your OB makes you feel like crap every time you walk into the office, they're not just going to magically change over and go, I should support this person now that they're pregnant. They're just going to continue to make you feel like crap because of their own emotional baggage. And whether it's because they're overworked, they're trying to set boundaries because they've seen so much hot mess going on and they don't want to connect to their patients anymore because it affects them too much. Like, I don't know what their deal is, but you need someone who's going to be on your side. It's really important.
You really, really do. And it feels so much better when you have someone like this is why I love natural health practitioners. When you have someone in your corner, it's like the weight is lifted off your shoulders. Yes. You get to share that load. You've got two brains instead of one. And it feels so supportive and so much better. And if I have a client who is pregnant, I mean, I actually say this to any of my clients with PCOS, but particularly if you're pregnant and you're trying to get something from your doctor, I'm like, you don't need to lie to them, but you can mention the fact that this is stressing you out and you're not supposed to stress out a pregnant woman.
Sometimes it's time to lie. Because you're just not going to get any testing.
Yes.
You're not going to get any whatever.
Amp it
and
up.
Like, just say what you need to say to get the test so we can get... You know,
I'm
and
always
it's
saying,
like,
don't play
it's
it
bending
down.
The truth. It's bending the truth.
And just leaning into what is true. Like, don't we just have such a tendency of playing things down. It is such a huge thing. I think it happens with women, particularly because of the society that we have grown up in.
You don't want to be a burden.
We don't want to be a burden. We're people pleasers.
Play it up. Don't play it down. Play it up.
Play it up. That's the motto of this episode. Don't play it down. Play it up.
For sure. No, you need to. And I there was a study, and I can't, you know, there's multiple studies that are done on this, but they just showed that when a woman feels supported, and the more support that she has, the chance of life birth goes up to like 80%. They showed, you know, 80% was obviously the higher limit, but just the woman feeling supported. And I think that's something that is so easy for us as practitioners to do for our patients is to just listen and to go, hey, I don't know what's going on, but let me help you figure this out.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely. I think too, when you're feeling worried about something, you've got hormones going on, like it's very hard sometimes to see clearly. And then when you get to talk it out with somebody, it just, the clarity comes often even just from within. It doesn't even necessarily take that other person. It takes talking it out, I think. And it just, that being that soundboard can help you get so much clearer about what you feel and what you want and what you need.
Yep. For sure. Mm.
And you touched on something before that it made me want to say, just with that pregnancy care and testing for like nutrients and things, I think that's another really big thing that needs to happen prior to pregnancy is get your nutrients tested, because there is a bunch of them that, well, first of all, they can make it harder to ovulate. They can impact the health of our eggs, but they can also increase our risk of pregnancy loss. You know, we look at pregnancy loss and it's so often said that it's, you know, it's just nature and there's nothing we can do about it. And I think to a degree that is, of course, true. We know some eggs are just not able to grow into babies because of genetic reasons, or chromosomal issues. But there are so many causes of pregnancy loss that are preventable. And I think a big part of it is nutrient deficiency and then some hormone stuff there as well. Yep. So getting some good labs done at the beginning of your fertility journey, I just think is so pivotal.
Yeah. And I mean, I'll always bring the male on board because I think when women with PCOS will just go, oh, but like, it's me. It's a me issue. I know I have PCOS and that's why we're not getting pregnant. And I think that you know, when a woman is already struggling with the quality of the egg because of the high androgens and the inflammation and the insulin and the thyroid and oxidative stress, all of this stuff, the quality of the sperm becomes that much more important because the egg now doesn't have the capacity to fix the DNA fragmentation within the sperm if it's high or any of the chromosomal issues. You know, we as women will take that blame for the miscarriage because we're going through it, and it's not to place the blame but to involve the man in the process because he's just as important. He's 50% of that DNA,
he's just as important, and the goal is just as much his goal. You know, it's the same. For sure. Even if you are just working on your own health with your PCOS, like you being feeling better, you having improved fertility is just as much your goal as it should be. Sorry, just as much his goal as yours, because you're building a family together. And so leaning on your partner, I think, is really, really important. But I cut you off there. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, that's it. And I was just going to, you know, I also always say that it's hard for me to believe if a woman is going through high periods of stress, she's overwhelmed, she's inflamed, and she has all these health issues, and the man is just on this other side going, I'm good, I don't have anything, it's just her. Because to me, that actually tells me that there's a huge disconnect between them. And sometimes his immune system, and I'm thinking of a couple, she actually just gave birth, but she experienced a loss at 37 weeks. And that's, you know, it's heartbreaking. So when we met, she has this kind of PCOS where the blood sugar is not, the HbA1c is not super high, but when we put a CGM on, it was doing this. And so average is pretty good, but the way that her body's regulating isn't. She's not digesting. There's a lot of inflammation, can't put on weight, but has acne, losing hair, all that jazz. And then when we talk to him, it's like, he's totally fine. He's got no issues. If I look at the microbiomes and he has the slightest infection, she will get burdened by that so much more than he will, because his immune system is so much more robust that he's okay, but it impacts her. So usually I find that they have the same infections, the same issues, but the man, because of his stronger metabolism, because of his testosterone levels, because of the lack of the fluctuations of the hormones, he'll generally handle things a lot better than she will, but she's carrying the quote-unquote burdens. So I always focus on the man to help him get better, because then he can be this support blanket, this protector, this provider, this foundation for her. So then now her nervous system comes down and she goes, okay, I can focus on healing because he's good and now I'm good. And then, you know, here we go. It's, we attract a partner for a reason. And I think it's so silly for women to go through a health journey on their own when they have a partner. Whether you want to have a kid or not, when I first started practicing, I would have all these women come in and it's like, oh, my husband is fine. He doesn't need to do anything. Her ability to get better was so much lower than when I had the family sitting in the office and they were doing and implementing things together. It's like they would just double the speed they would go versus her like, oh, I'm supposed to eat a salad, but you guys can eat whatever you want. What are we doing here? You know?
I know. And what I'm sure you see this too, not only is the outcome better, but the connection grows. There's like, there's a connection that grows when you go through a health journey with your partner.
Versus the disconnection that happens.
When you're doing everything and they're not doing anything. Yeah, that does create a divide. But when you actually come together on a health journey, it's really beautiful. And I think it can connect you more deeply than you could imagine.
Yeah.
But
talking about what the GnRH pulse needs, you know, to support that, oxytocin is a really big component of that, and dopamine and feeling pleasure and euphoria. And so skin to skin contact, like talking about cheap things that you could do is like do some skin to skin contact, not like intercourse, but just like skin to skin. Or having candlelight instead of bright light before you go to bed. Like that helps to regulate your GnRH pulses. So I think a lot of the time we can involve our partner into this journey because it actually helps them feel closer to us and vice versa. And you know, what a beautiful space to create a baby from.
Absolutely. And sort of going back to what you were talking about before with those optimal ranges and how the ranges have changed over time, the thing that really came up in my mind when you were saying that was semen analysis. I believe that, I mean, yes, to be honest with you, it's not something I thoroughly understand and it's not something I thoroughly comment on, but it's something that I've been seeing from other, from naturopaths, is that these ranges have really changed over time. And what would be considered like fertile now would be considered like infertile 20 years ago. Is that what you're seeing as well?
Yeah. The thing for sperm analysis, I think the biggest aha moment for people is that they're looking at the reference range for IVF. So they're looking to see if you qualify for IVF versus if it's enough for natural conception. So.
Whoa.
Yes.
Did not know that.
For IVF, 4% morphology or lower is like, yeah, we can work with that. 15% concentration, we'll wash it, we'll put it in a petri dish. It's fine. But for natural conception, you want, you know, 50 million per mil. You want 6 to 10% strict morphology. You want 70 to 80% sperm moving versus 50%. You know, and it seems like it's not that big of a deal, but, you know, it's a difference between millions of sperms surrounding the eggs versus, you know, tens of millions, I should say, versus just millions. It's a really, really big difference. And it can absolutely make or break the fertilization from that even happening, you know.
I think another thing to kind of that I would love to touch on when it comes to a PCOS fertility journey that I think is a bit of a misconception is, or not a misconception, but I think a lot of the time when you have PCOS, a lot of people have got goals around their weight. It's usually something we struggle with. And as a health landscape,
androgens,
absolutely. But in a health landscape, I think too, just generally in society, we really see weight as the tell of our health. And once you get into PCOS for a while, you start to realize, like, you know, that's not necessarily true for us at all. But I think when you're trying to conceive, we have to think about what is the priority here. The priority is that you generally speaking, the priority for people is I want to have a baby. And I see so many people come to me, and this blew me away. I didn't expect it. I didn't expect it at all. How many people come to me and their bodies are really depleted because they are on some type of restriction, whether it is restricting a macro like carbs, whether they're plant-based and so they're struggling to meet protein requirements, whether they're fasting, or they just generally have a pretty nutrient, low nutrient sort of dense diet.
Over-exercising too, right? Because they're just trying to get that
over-exercising, yes. And so...
Been there, done that.
Yeah, and a lot of people that they are doing so many things for their health. And then you look at all the tests and there's just depletion, 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 depletion. And it's they're in this state of restriction. And I really like to talk about the idea that I believe that when you're on a fertility journey, that it's really nice to be in a mindset of abundance and overflow. Yes. It's like, what can we add to the plate? Like so frequently, almost never with me is it, what have we got to cut out? Because I just don't, it's usually not the place we need to look, honestly. Yeah. And a lot of the time it is, what can we add? You just need to add some stuff in. Like a lot of the time people are needing to eat more or they're needing to add in more protein or whatever it might be, because healthy fats and protein are the building blocks of our body. And we need, you know, an array of fruits and vegetables. We want to get as many nutrients in the body as possible. And I think so many clients are surprised themselves to find that they're really depleted when they think they're eating in a really, really healthy way, but it's just too restrictive. Maybe it's calorie restrictive. Whatever it might be. I've just been blown away by that. I've been blown away because when we are depleted, it impacts our ability to ovulate. It impacts the health of our eggs as well.
Everything. You don't have the energy for anything.
Yeah, you don't have the energy. Exactly. Yeah. Do you see this a lot as well?
Yeah, I think the shift in perspective that I want to offer is I do think that weight tells us about an imbalance, but I don't think it's the imbalance that we think it is. I actually think when a person is carrying a lot of excess weight, I don't think that they have excess energy. I actually think that they're depleted and they have a lot of fatigue, because weight, in my question, is always going to come down to why is the body holding on to that excess weight. Mm. And if you are going down the rabbit hole of, and I did this on my, you know, my health journey before I even became a naturopath, of under eating, over exercising, and then going into a depletion state that caused me to go into binging, and, you know, round and round you go. But I do think now of someone who is really overweight that they're actually very energy deficient. Mm. And their mitochondria function is very poor. And mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell that makes hormones, that makes our energy, that helps us detox. So something is missing, but I'm a big proponent of the right therapy, right person, right time. And so if you are restricting your diet and you're overexercising, but you are not losing weight, and you've done that for 1 month or 2 months, even, you know, obviously I've seen people do it for years.
Yeah.
But I want people to stop and go, okay, I don't think this is working. Instead of, I need to do more. And so that's where I like to pull people back and go, if after a month of restricting your calories and exercising, your weight didn't budge, or you maybe even gained weight, it's not that you need to restrict your calories even more and you need to exercise even more. It's actually that you need a completely different therapy and an overhaul. And in some instances, it's, you know, I'm very cautious with fasting. I do use fasting quite a bit with some of my patients because it is like truly, truly beneficial. But for some, especially with any eating disorders, you're not gonna make them fast because that's gonna trigger some of those control issues and nervous system dysregulation and, you know, the level of stress that they're under. Yeah. So I always look at a lens if the weight is a symptom. And so it's understanding why the weight is there. And then it's very few times. And this is a male patient that I'm dealing, that I have right now, you know, as part of the couple. But I'll give you this example because he's a frequent pot smoker. And he's just kind of said that this is his habit. It's what he does. But he really wants to lose weight as well. And then he has these really strong cravings for sugar, and he's really tired, and he's probably anxious, and that's why he's smoking pot. So he started to open up about that. But then it's like, I'm like, something isn't right. You know, like, let me, and he keeps trying to restrict himself and doing the keto because that's the only thing. And I'm like, put this device on, let me see how you're sleeping. And he's getting like 2 minutes of deep sleep and like 10 minutes of REM sleep a night. So I'm like, you need to go and check to see if you have sleep apnea, because I'm just not going to be able to touch that weight unless you're sleeping well and that inflammation is down. And so a lot of, like, this is this prime example of like, he's focusing on, oh man, I need to do keto and I keep failing and I suck. And so I need to keep trying harder or doing something, where in reality is like, you're chasing the wrong thing. And that's why the weight is there. So we want to be mindful, aware of it, because I do think it tells us something about the health, and it does cause a lot of inflammation, and it is an endocrine hormone. Like, it produces hormones. It's not just sitting there, you know? So that is an issue that feeds into it. But kind of like we talked about, that negative feedback loop, it's the weight is sitting there, but like, why is it sitting there? Yeah. And usually there is, you know, whether it's the sleep, inflammation, an infection, a heavy metal, something that's impacting mitochondria. That's why it's there. So we deal with that. And then all of a sudden, all the things that you are doing regularly, like eating well, and all of a sudden it works.
You don't have
these really strong cravings because you don't have this candida overgrowth that's driving you up the wall unless you have, you know, some sugar in your body. And I'll say like, hey, it's not you, it's the bugs. So I want you to be able to differentiate. Is that you craving it, or is it your bugs craving it? And they're like, you know what? That's kind of weird, but yeah, it's not me. I feel like it's an out-of-body experience. I can't stop myself. I'm like, yeah, so it's the bugs. So let's get the bugs out of your body and, you know, the bad ones. And then all of a sudden you're like, yeah, I don't have those cravings anymore. So I think we need to be kind with ourselves, but recognize that there is something else, you know?
I agree. And like you say, it's the symptom. It's a symptom. And when we get to that root, that's where we're going to see that shift happen. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think, I honestly think, like, in terms of people trying to get pregnant with PCOS, and I guess maybe wanting like a starting point, I really think getting like thorough testing done is it's just so important. And I think it's finding your version of PCOS. I really
talk about weight and thyroid issues, right? Like, you see some thyroid and you're like, no wonder you're not doing weight.
No wonder. Exactly. Yeah. Well, that was me. It was just, there were years of just like my, I was fully on top of my PCOS. Like, everything on paper was fine. My cycle was regular. Everything was looking great. Couldn't lose weight though. Just couldn't do it. And then eventually came the Hashimoto's diagnosis, and it had probably been there all along, but doctors often aren't doing proper thorough testing, and that reference range on TSH is wide. And so it was just,
yeah, you have like a 6 TSH, like, that's fine. You're like, what are you talking about?
So, yeah, I think getting really thorough testing to figure out, when I say thorough testing, it can just begin and be blood testing. It doesn't necessarily have to be. I think once you get deeper in and maybe if things aren't shifting, like functional testing is incredible, of course. Yep. But I think there's a lot of blood tests we can get that can tell us so much. And I think if you're listening and you have PCOS and you're trying to conceive, I would say ask your question and you have an irregular cycle. Ask yourself your question, why do I have an irregular cycle? And if your answer is because I have PCOS, then it's time to go deeper, because that is an umbrella statement.
That's the next question.
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you have PCOS? What are your PCOS drivers? What hormones have been pushed out of balance? That is really, really key. And then also, have we got any nutrient deficiencies going on? Those are the things that are really going to make it clear why you're struggling to ovulate. And once you know why, then suddenly you are not dealing with this broad concept of, well, I've got to deal with my PCOS. It's like, well, actually, I need to work on my stress. I need to work on insulin resistance. I've got to bring my estrogen down, and I've got to bring my luteinizing hormone down. That's what's going on for me. And it's very specific then, and it can make a lot more, it's just so much less overwhelming, because you're dealing with specifics instead of this broad concept, which, you know, there are 1,000 tips for PCOS. Like, I mean, we see that all the time as well. Like, I'm sure there isn't a client that comes to me that's not already doing 10 things or more. They're always doing so many things. They're trying all these things they've seen on the internet. People like me contribute to it. You know, there's all this noise on the internet. We do.
But you should figure out what's going on for you.
For you. Yeah, always, always. But not everyone says that. You know, there are people on there just being like, well, oh my God, you got PCOS. You got to try berberine. Like, berberine's changed the game. This is the thing.
Everyone who is on, and don't get me wrong, there's a ton of women that I'll put on an inositol because that's genuinely what they need. But then there's times when it's like, that's not the thing that you need.
Exactly.
And I don't know about you, but I've never seen a PCOS case that's exactly the same.
Never.
Yeah. It's not a thing. We are still, just because, and that's what I try to like break down as a concept. It's like, it's a diagnosis. It doesn't tell us why you have it. It just puts you into this umbrella, and that umbrella just kind of keeps widening and getting bigger and getting bigger. And so if you want to get specific into understanding your own, you actually, because you are your own individual, unique snowflake, we need to understand what's going on. And you can go down the rabbit hole of genetics and, you know, methylation and nutrient and gut and all of this stuff. Yes. And there's times to do it. And I think it just really depends on the person, right? Like,
it does.
I'm the kind of person that's going to dig and do all the things.
Yeah, me too.
But I wasn't like that at the beginning of my journey. At the beginning, I was dabbling. And I think that's important too, to just dabble. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then know when it's time to go deeper, you know. Like, I don't dabble now because I don't have time to dabble now. I don't have the clientele that wants to dabble.
Yeah.
But I, you know, when I was 22 going with my IBS and anxiety, it's like I was dabbling. And that's great. That's what I needed then, you know. So just knowing what you need and when you can get the right support is really important.
I agree with that.
Tell us about your course.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. It's called the PCOS Fertility Plan, and it's based on the idea of, you know, a lot of the time, by the time you're coming to me, you're not wanting to wing it anymore. You're not wanting to just try this or that and just see what happens. It's like, actually, I'd love a plan.
I'm tired of it. Yeah.
I'd love a plan that is,
yeah,
and a plan that's effective, and a plan that is personalized and tailored to me. And I'm not just trying this thing I read on a blog and trying this thing I saw on TikTok. So it's a self-paced course, but it absolutely enables you to create this personalized plan. And it's a plan you'll understand because I take you through it. As I said, a big part of my job is teaching these big concepts in ways that you can understand. And, so it's a video course, and I take you through it, and I help you to uncover exactly what is preventing you from getting pregnant and exactly what you can do about it. We look at the whole picture, and I always sort of talk about there being kind of three pillars of fertility, and that is ovulation, the egg health, you know, the eggs that you're actually ovulating, and the health of your reproductive environment too, like the actual health of your uterus and your tubes and if we can address those three areas, then you're just in such a good position for getting pregnant. So yeah, it's called the PCOS Fertility Plan. I actually have a code for you guys. It'll get you 30% off the plan. And it's Dr. Jane 30. So DRJANE 30. And that'll get you 30% off. And when you join the course, you can email me anytime. So you've got access to me. I'm here to chat about it. I tend to respond to people with little voice notes, and I always call them like a little personal podcast, because most people do know me from my podcast. So it's like, this is one just for you. But it's just been so beautiful and so exciting. And it just enables me to help more people, because I do have small children and there's a limit to how many people I can see. And it's just been wonderful and very, very
exciting. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at PCOS Fertility Support, on Facebook at PCOS Fertility Support, and my website is PCOSfertilitysupport.com.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Mel, for being here. I really enjoyed connecting. I love, it's funny, social media, you never know who you're going to meet. And then you're like, that's right. This is totally what social media is for, is to actually meet, collaborate and connect.
It's really nice, isn't it?
Like-minded people. And you're in Australia, so, yes. You know, other side of the world, which is super cool to be able to do
that.
That's
so cool.
It is.
Thank you so much for having me. Honestly, no, thanks for having me, because I love talking about this stuff, and it is really refreshing when you get to talk to someone new about it. It's like, yes. Like I'm firing right now. I'm like,
that's good.
I should go and make a bunch of content, because I feel so energized by it. That's so safe. Thank you. Yeah.
No, thank you so much. PCOSfertilitysupport.com. Yes.
That's it.
Amazing. Thank you.